From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, in years with average rainfall, about 30% of our water supply comes from groundwater. That amount spikes to 40% of our water supply during dry years. Increasing demands from agriculture and a growing population, as well as an unreliable supply of water from other sources, has placed added burdens on our already overtaxed groundwater supply. And despite these growing pressures, California, unlike any other Western state, has no comprehensive statewide regulation of groundwater use. As a result, some argue that there's a disconnect between groundwater law and science, and that something has to be done to protect this vital part of our water supply. The question is what? We'll ask. Anton Favorini Sorba, a water policy expert with the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office, and Michelle Sneed from the U.S. Geological Survey's California Water Science Center. We'll also hear from two members of the Steering Committee on Sustainable Groundwater Management with the California Water Foundation, David Orth, the General Manager of the Kings River Conservation District, and Laura Firestone, an attorney with the Community Water Center. We'll also hear from Mark Grossi, an award-winning environmental reporter with the Fresno Bee. Groundwater pumping, a race to the bottom?
Additional funding for the Maddie Report made possible by a grant from Paramount Agricultural Companies, growing healthy food for you and your family.
From the California Channel at the State Capitol, Valley PBS, and the Maddie Institute, it's the Maddie Report with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. Today we're at the State Capitol in Sacramento, and the issue is groundwater, the water beneath our feet. How dependent are we on it, and how is it being managed? Our guest is Anton Favorini Chorba, who is a water policy expert with the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thank you, Mark. So,
why is groundwater relevant? How much does groundwater supply our overall water supply?
Groundwater is a major contributor to our water supply. About 75% of Californians get some portion of their water from groundwater, their drinking water. As a percentage of our overall water use, it's about 30% on average. In dry years like we're in right now, it increases to 40% or more.
That's pretty significant. So what role do you think groundwater is going to play in our future water needs?
Yeah, so groundwater is particularly important as kind of drought storage in drier years. The Department of Water Resources says that in the future we're going to have significantly higher demands for water overall in the future, particularly in dry years. And groundwater is one of the less expensive ways to meet that demand. So enhancing our groundwater management will definitely be an important part of that.
Yeah, there's this huge opportunity there with all the aquifers, if we could just fill them.
Well, that's right, yeah. And it's a combination of surface storage is important for helping fill groundwater. Groundwater is good because there's a lot of space there, but it takes a little bit of time to get water into the aquifers. Surface storage is good. You can capture it when it's running off and then slowly let it into the ground.
There's been obviously a big support in the valley for above ground storage dams.
Right.
A lot of people don't make the connection between above ground storage dams and underground groundwater. You're saying there's an absolute connection there.
There absolutely is, yeah.
California is interesting. It's one of two Western states without a comprehensive state-managed groundwater use permitting system. It kind of sounds like California is the Wild West of groundwater pumping.
It is a little bit. And actually, at this point, we are now the only Western state. Recently, Texas was the last holdout. In California...
So they're even regulating it in Texas?
There are some court cases, believe me, on that one. So right now groundwater is presumed to belong to the landowner who overlies that basin. So they can drill a well. Sometimes they need a permit from the county, but otherwise it can be unregulated in some areas. Surface water is different. For surface water, you generally need a permit from the State Water Resources Control Board to take water out of a lake or a river.
It seems like water is water, though, and particularly since one affects the other, that why would you regulate one and not the other?
Yeah, I think you're getting to kind of a, there's something of a disconnect in our state law in terms of surface water and groundwater.
You know, I do want to ask you, you were mentioning about court decisions that are happening maybe in Texas. What about in California? Are there court decisions, you were mentioning maybe local ordinances, that they do regulate groundwater use?
That's right. Certainly there are many parts of the state that locals are successfully managing their groundwater. And they do that either through a court adjudication, where essentially a court comes in and creates groundwater rights, or they'll have local regulations that ensure that groundwater is available to people in that area. So they might prohibit exporting the groundwater to another basin as a way of doing that.
But it's not that groundwater isn't regulated at all. I mean, there are federal and state agencies that regulate various aspects of groundwater. What are they and what do they do?
Yeah, that's right. Generally, the state role is to either support or provide incentives for local management of groundwater, and that's done through grants or loans in a lot of cases. The state also does a fair bit of monitoring of groundwater quality, but nothing really at this time on groundwater use, on who's using.
So a focus on quality, not quantity.
That's right.
All right. But there has been some state legislation that's added some new monitoring requirements. What are then, how are they being enforced?
Yeah. So in 2009, the legislature passed a law that required local agencies, water districts, irrigation districts, to submit data in a standardized format on the level of groundwater, so how far underground the water table is. That's a pretty big step, because right now we don't really have any sense of what the groundwater resource is. The local agencies that don't voluntarily submit that data will become ineligible for state grants and loans for water purposes.
So it's kind of a carrot there to get them to do that.
Right.
How big a problem is groundwater overpumping, and should we be concerned about it? Our next guest is Michelle Sneed from the U.S. Geological Survey's California Water Science Center. That's a mouthful. And it's going to hopefully help explain the situation to us. Welcome to the Matty Report.
Thanks for having me.
So, overpumping or overdrafting of groundwater, is that a new problem?
It's really not a new problem. It's been happening in California in different areas for a long time. We were massively overdrafting the Central Valley area in the mid-50s and 60s. But then when the California Aqueduct was built, the Delta Mendota Canal was built, they started delivering surface water to those areas, and so groundwater pumping was greatly reduced because surface water was available.
So what about, California, unlike a lot of other Western states, has no state standards on groundwater management. And some say the situation might even be worse in the Central Valley. What is the situation in the Central Valley?
In the Central Valley right now, groundwater levels are declining. So what that generally means is that more water is being taken out than is being replenished. And during a drought, less water is being replenished, less water is coming down the California Aqueduct and the Delta Mendota Canal. And so groundwater pumping is used to make up for that deficit to keep the crops watered out in the fields.
So it's a double whammy. You're not getting rain, and you're not getting water from the reservoirs because they're not getting any snowpack runoff. So people are pumping more.
That's right. That happens during drought periods in some parts of the Central Valley. In other places in California, there's essentially more taken out every year than there is replenished. In places like Borrego Springs, for instance, they have no access to surface water. So their entire supply comes from groundwater.
100%.
100%.
So what other things are happening in the valley that are contributing maybe to this issue? Why are they pumping so much in the valley?
Well, they're pumping so much.
Besides the fact they don't have water, is it the crops? Is it housing developments? What's causing it?
Well, it's really largely agricultural. So, the San Joaquin Valley, the Central Valley in general, produces lots of food for the nation. So they need a lot of water to water those crops. And there's a couple of things happening. First of all, the demand has increased relative to the supply, and that is exacerbated during droughts. But in some places, like Madera County, where they have very little access to surface water, being in a drought or being in a wet year really is irrelevant to how much groundwater they're pumping. So to them, it doesn't really matter how much is coming down the canals or down rivers because they have no access to that.
So they're always going to pump?
They're always going to pump.
Is there any data out there to tell how much groundwater actually exists?
Well, what we use is measuring groundwater levels in wells. And then we incorporate that information to complex hydrologic models that simulate flow in the aquifer system and on the surface. So we use that data to constrain those models, to keep those models honest.
Well, for a non-scientist like me, and probably some folks in our audience, let's make that a little simpler for them to understand, for me to understand. So could you explain it maybe in another way? How do we know how much water is there? It sounds like it might be, frankly, a guesstimate.
It really is a guesstimate. This is water that you can't see, you can't directly measure. There aren't enough wells to really get a full picture. You know, that those are the measurements we have, and they're spatially far apart. And the measurements are also infrequent in many places. So, and you also have to know where the bottom is, and that is difficult. You have to drill very deep. That's very expensive. People don't drill all the way to the bottom of the valley to get water. So it's a little bit nebulous about where that bottom is. And so how big is this pool? How big is this bathtub is always a question.
So we really
always
don't
know, improving on that.
We really don't know how much is there, but do we know, do we have a better estimate on what is actually being pumped?
Well, it depends on where you are, but in the Central Valley, most agricultural pumps are not metered and not reported. And for us as scientists, this is a huge part of the supply for agricultural fields. And it's a number that we have to back out. So we try to measure all of the other components of supply and demand. And then essentially what is left, because we know what kind of crop it is, we know how much water it takes to grow that crop. And so we back that information out based on all the other data.
Wow, it's putting a lot of data together. We're talking with Michelle Sneed with the U.S. Geological Survey's California Water Science Center. So what are the implications if overdrafting or groundwater goes unchecked?
Well, what we have been measuring is large swaths of land subsiding. And subsidence is caused by aquifer system compaction. So the aquifer system is getting thinner as a result of groundwater levels lowering.
So there's water in the aquifer.
Yes.
They're pumping the water out. And then what happens?
Well, most of compaction that is responsible for land subsidence occurs in clay units. Clays are different than sands and gravels because they're platy minerals. You can think about them as like tiny little pancakes. And when they are deposited, when clay is deposited, they're deposited in these random orientations. And there's lots of space between these pancakes, and that's where water is stored. When you start to lower groundwater levels from pumping or from any other process, when groundwater levels are lowered, and they're lowered beyond this threshold, it actually, the clays will rearrange themselves into more like a stack of pancakes, and there's a lot less space between a stack of pancakes than randomly oriented pancakes. So not only does the volume get smaller, so the land subsides, but you also can't store as much water in the aquifer system now than you could before the compaction occurred.
So is subsidence reversible?
No, it's not reversible. So even if you brought water levels back up, recharge the aquifer system, those clay grains will not go back into random orientations. They will inflate a little bit, but still you will have a significant loss of storage capacity in the system, and the land will not come back up.
I had read somewhere that was about 15 or 20% on average loss of storage space, but you're saying it perhaps is more than that?
No, I'd say that's probably about right for most systems. We really haven't done the work necessary to determine how much storage is lost in many systems. Those are expensive studies to undertake, so we've only done that in a few areas.
But the magnitude of groundwater, you know, in California is incredible. It's much more than surface storage, and by a multiple of what, 10?
That's a good question. I'm not sure exactly the relative size of availability of surface water and groundwater. But with groundwater, you have to remember, as groundwater levels lower, it's more expensive to pump. You also, in some areas, deeper sediments, especially in desert basins, tend to be higher in arsenic. And so as you're now drawing water from deeper in the basin, the water quality may start to degrade. So that's another problem. You may even start to introduce salt water if you're close to the coast.
Okay, so what are local jurisdictions doing to address this problem?
Well, some are quite proactive. The Central California Irrigation District is one of those. They're out in the Madera area, and they are working with farmers to try to find alternatives. And really the alternative is finding more water, a different water supply. So they're working amongst each other, trying to sort of move around pumping from one farm to another to see, you know, how that works. One of the problems is we really don't have the measurement systems in place to gauge how these actions are really going to affect the system.
So from a scientific perspective, what do you think can be done to address this concern?
Well, really the magic bullet is to not lower groundwater levels beyond that threshold I was talking about where these clay particles rearrange themselves.
Do we have an actual number for that?
In many places we do, yes. And it typically is the previous lowest groundwater level. So if we're going to lower groundwater levels beyond their previous low historically, that's when we start to induce subsidence. If we keep groundwater levels above that threshold, then the threat and risk from subsidence is much, much less.
But isn't this all interrelated? In other words, surface storage also impacts groundwater. So if we had more surface storage, more dams, we could use that maybe to help regenerate the water in the aquifers.
Yeah, really any new sources of water that we can manage. You know, aquifer systems are also great storage systems. So not only surface water storage, but we need to start thinking more about groundwater storage. And some places in the southern end of the San Joaquin Valley are doing that. In Kern County, there's large programs where they have these large ponds. And when the water's available, so we have big storms and water's coming down the Kern River, they capture that water, they put it in these ponds, and they let it percolate down into the aquifer system to help recharge the system. So that sort of balances them a little bit better down there.
And maybe issues like gray water, you know, reusing water instead of just letting it, you know, go away. That might be another idea to kind of recapture.
Yeah, recycled water. Many places do that. You see out in Antelope Valley, for instance, you see what we call purple pipes. And those are recycled water, and they color them purple so that people don't drink out of them. But that's another great source.
We may be seeing purple pipes in our future. Well, I want to thank Michelle Sneed from the California Water Science Center at the USGS. We're rejoined by Anton Favorini-Chorba from the LAO's office, who's their water expert there. In a recent report, you stated that, quote, there was a disconnect between groundwater law and science, unquote. How so?
Yeah, that's right. So hydrologic science shows that groundwater and surface water are very much physically connected. So for instance, in the San Joaquin Valley, it used to be that that many of the rivers there would gain water as they flowed downstream because the groundwater table was so high. The groundwater would actually be adding to the rivers. That doesn't happen anymore because we've drained or lowered the level of the aquifers at that point, which means we're actually taking some of the water out of the rivers. State law separates surface waters from what they call percolating groundwater, the water that's in the pores and in the soil.
And we were talking about earlier, these are all interconnected. Surface storage, groundwater, they're all connected. You also mentioned in your report that, quote, gaps in groundwater management complicate statewide water planning, unquote. What gaps are you talking about?
Yeah, I think the biggest gap is right now we don't have any comprehensive data on really even the quality, but especially the use of groundwater in the state. We don't know who's using it. Oftentimes, the Department of Water Resources actually has to kind of back out calculations of groundwater use from other data. And the challenge that introduces is when we're looking forward and trying to plan our water future as a state, without a good sense of how much groundwater we have and the rate at which we're using it, it can be very difficult to plan for the future.
You know, there's also a lot of talk about groundwater contamination. How does that impact groundwater supply, and what is the cost to clean it up?
Yeah, contamination can have a significant impact on groundwater supplies because oftentimes if a well becomes contaminated, you have to close that well, and you lose that as a source of supply. We don't always know at the state level when that occurs. You certainly can treat groundwater or blend it, but that can be very expensive, particularly if you're a small or disadvantaged community. As far as cleaning up goes, that's actually even more expensive in a lot of cases than treatment. A UC Davis report recently came out a year or two ago that said cleaning up nitrate contamination in the Central Valley, the cost would be on the order of $2 billion a year or more.
A year?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the governor has taken, moving forward a little bit on some of the monitoring of groundwater. He includes $1.9 million in his current budget for overdraft management. How big a problem is overdrafting, and will $1.9 million address the problem?
Yeah. So I would say first, we don't have a great sense of the full scale of overdraft. The Department of Water Resources estimates that we're overdrafting by 1.5 million acre feet a year, and that is the amount of water that about 3 million households might use in a year. So it's even that estimate is a significant amount.
So we're overdrafting. In other words, it's like a bank account. We're draining the bank account.
That's right. We're taking out more than flows in naturally, or we're putting back in place.
Okay. The governor also has $2.9 million in his budget for groundwater elevation monitoring. Can you explain that?
Yeah, and so that relates to the 2009 legislation that I mentioned earlier, which is this is just monitoring. It's again trying to look at how far below the surface of the ground is the groundwater table, and how is that changing over time?
Okay, so are there any standards for a groundwater elevation that it should be at this level? And if not, okay, how are they enforcing it? So they have the number, and then what?
Right. Well, that's the big question. Right now, this proposal is just to monitor the overdraft management proposal that you mentioned before. In theory, could ultimately result in some regulation of groundwater management. There are a lot of details that need to be worked out there.
Well, your office, the Legislative Analyst's Office, has made several recommendations to improve groundwater management. What are they?
Yeah, so the first one would be to establish a more comprehensive system of monitoring, particularly of groundwater use in the state. And in that case, you'd require local water districts or other local agencies to report their groundwater use in some standardized format. That would allow us to integrate that into some of our state water planning decisions. The second recommendation would be to, in areas where we see that there's high potential for overdraft or contamination, we should put into place some sort of institution that would essentially regulate groundwater extraction in those areas.
That necessarily doesn't have to be at the state level. It could be at the local level.
That's right. There's definitely a place for local control there in terms of how do you want the basin to look in the future. There may be parts of the state where we don't necessarily we could take more out than we are putting back in, but in others you might want to manage it differently.
Well, I want to thank Anton Favorini-Chorboff with the State Legislative Analyst's Office, as well as Michelle Sneed from the U.S. Geological Survey's California Water Science Center, for joining us.
Up next, we'll discuss whether the recent spike in groundwater pumping in the San Joaquin Valley is sustainable and whether it poses any long-term risks to the region's groundwater with David Orth, the General Manager of the Kings River Conservation District, Laurel Firestone, an attorney with the Community Water Center, and Mark Rossi, an award-winning environmental reporter with the Fresno Bee.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. The recent drought has made the San Joaquin Valley ground zero for the debate over groundwater pumping. We're joined by some of the most informed folks on that issue today. They are Mark Grassi, the Fresno Bee's environmental reporter, Laura Firestone, the attorney with the Community Water Center. She's also on the steering committee on sustainable groundwater management for the California Water Foundation, and David Orth, a general manager of the Kings River Conservation District and another member of the steering committee on sustainable groundwater management for the California Water Foundation. Welcome to all of you to the Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Well, Mark, let's start with you. What are you seeing out there in terms of groundwater pumping? Has there been a spike in drilling in the valley?
Yes, that's what I understand. I understand there's like a six-month to a year wait, and that some farmers are actually buying their own rigs and just doing it themselves, and the costs have gone right through the roof.
Really?
It's a cottage industry now.
Laura, what are you hearing?
Well, we work with many of the both individual well owners and communities and schools that rely on one well for their full drinking water supply. There's literally hundreds of schools that rely on one well, and millions of Californians that rely on a single household well. And so more and more people are finding themselves without water at all as groundwater levels are dropping, and also seeing groundwater contamination levels rising.
Yeah, David, you know, you're with the Kings River Conservation District. You're seeing a lot of people out there getting those witches, those divining rods to find water?
We aren't knowledgeable of specific information relative to increases in pumping, but like Mark, we've heard a lot of discussion about backlogs in the well drilling industry and acquisition of new drill rigs and bringing them into the valley to deal with this groundwater challenge. I think it's reflective of the drought condition, and this, you know, we've kind of reached this perfect storm, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think I would guess that the cost of water is going up, which is making pumping more economically viable. Is that true, Dave?
Well, in many cases, this pumping is the only water that's available because of reductions or loss of surface water supplies for a myriad of reasons. The only thing growers have available in some of these communities that Lowell refers to is groundwater. And so in order to maintain economic base and to take care of their family, these facilities or these growers are drilling deeper so that they can have water to produce crops with.
Laura, what do you see as the reason or the reasons for the increased groundwater pumping in the valley?
Well, I mean, certainly reduce surface water flow is one, and reduced deliveries of surface water means more and more people that were relying on surface water are using groundwater. But, you know, there's also been a lot of land use changes. And so as we're putting in new developments or putting in permanent crops or putting in irrigation of pastures, there's a significant increase, while at the same time through, you know, droughts and over time through climate change, we're seeing a reduced surface water supplies that we can be using to recharge that. So it is sort of a perfect storm of unsustainability.
Dave, in the Kings River district where you are, is it different, or is it more about permanent crops being planted, or is it more about development or some other reasons for their increased groundwater pumping?
Well, in the Kings groundwater basin, and we are somewhat fortunate in that we have a local surface water source that is, you know, primarily affected by drought and perhaps over the long-term climate change. We aren't being affected by the combination of legal and regulatory actions that have reduced surface water imports into other areas of the valley and have really, put us on the brink of a disaster. We are experiencing changes in land use, both in terms of population growth, urban development, and cropping pattern changes in such a way that it's creating a greater dependency upon the groundwater basin.
You know, Mark, I'm wondering, is there a way to apportion the blame here? I mean, how much of it is groundwater pumping is, maybe blame is the wrong word, but use of groundwater pumping, how much of it is attributable to permanent crops? How much of it is attributable to, you know, sprawl and development changes? How much to climate change? Any idea on that? Have you seen any statistics on that?
I have not looked specifically at those things, but I can tell you that all of those are going to play into this mix. And you can't overstate the drought that's happening right now. I know things that worked in the past may not be working in the future. I talked to a bunch of farmers farming over 7,000 acres of citrus down in Tarabella, and they rely on surface water. They have no groundwater. That's 7,000 acres of trees that are going to die this summer.
Wow. That's quite a large, that's going to impact that community, obviously, quite a bit. What about, Mark, what about the amount of groundwater that is actually available or being pumped? Does anybody know exactly how much we have, Dave, and how much we're pumping?
Dave Orth is a guy who has some interesting numbers on that, and I'll let him speak for himself, but I know it's a considerable amount of water, and I think it's more important to understand the level of the water table and how fast it's dropping. It dropped 80 feet in just a matter of decades in Fresno before there was conjunctive use and using the water more wisely. And, you know, for this 1 year, I don't think it's you know, Westlands Water District is going to probably pump 600,000 acre feet from the ground. That is a lot of water. That's not going to get replaced in 1 year or even two or three. So it's a real resource problem if this drought continues.
So, Dave, what are your numbers?
Well, the San Joaquin Valley is blessed with this vast groundwater resource that has tens of millions of acre feet of groundwater stored. And the Kings Basin alone, which is only a little over a million acres, about 20% of the entire southern San Joaquin Valley footprint, has, by estimate of the California Department of Water Resources, over 90 million acre feet of stored groundwater down to an elevation of 1,000 feet. Mark is correct. It's not so much the quantity as it is the levels that we are drawing into that stored level. You know, we're not going to dry it tomorrow as a whole, but some of our shallower wells, as Laurel mentioned, are already losing prime and are having to be deepened or, new wells being driven or drilled. We do have a pretty good handle on the Kings Basin of, you know, the amount of annual overdraft, the total loss in storage. We've done a lot of hydrologic modeling and planning to find ourselves in a place where we can reach sustainability or balance within the next 20-year period. We're a bit unique in that we, again, have these surface water supplies and the benefit of coordination amongst our community to implement plans and strategies that we think will protect our resource longer term.
You know, Laurel, you're with the Community Water Center. Do you guys have any concerns about the groundwater being pumped, that whether or not it's sustainable over time?
Absolutely. I mean, we are already working with folks that have lost their entire water supply, as in the well is dry and they no longer have water in their homes. Right now, that's mostly domestic wells, but like I said, there's thousands of schools and hundreds of communities that rely on a single well. And so as those levels drop, and they are dropping, we're going to find entire communities without water at all. And that's a major public health hazard, a major issue for, you know, the ability of our communities to exist and certainly to thrive and live healthy and economically prosperous lives.
Dave, you seem to be mentioning that, indicating, listen, it's not a crisis today, but maybe down the line. Are you concerned at all about the long-term sustainability of groundwater in the Kings River Conservation District?
Yeah, I would say that most of the state is concerned about the sustainability of our current practices in terms of the groundwater resource that we are so dependent upon. Again, I think the Kings Basin has a bit of a head start, but some additional work that we need to do to get to that sustainable level. Now, I will qualify that, you know, what sustainable means in statute is not clear. And we do have some court cases historically that have defined what safe yield is, but the general thinking amongst the broader policymakers and the attorneys these days is that we need to look at the resource more than just a annual safe yield threshold and find the way to manage. Now, to Laurel's point, the person who's lost water today really doesn't care about the definition of sustainability. They care about making sure that you know, we figure out a way to get them drinking water and recharge their well. And so I think we've got to keep our eyes on kind of these short-term emergencies and deal with them, at the same time focusing on, you know, developing and implementing new practices to make sure that groundwater resource is protected into the, you know, the centuries into our future.
Yeah, I was thinking when you said the word, when we talk about the word sustainable, it sounds like those are fighting words, because sustainable in one person's mind may not be in another. Dave, what about some that say, like the nonpartisan legislative analysts, that they think there's a disconnect between groundwater law and science? Do you agree?
I would say that it's not real clear what that means, but I think most people have recognized that groundwater and surface water is more directly connected than California law actually defines. And yet I'm not sure that it is in anybody's mindset that we need to try to connect those dots. The decision to allow groundwater to be managed independently and separately and locally, and distinct from the statewide permit and license system for our surface water rights, was made pre-1914. And you know, it's served California fairly well. Now, again, we've seen significant changes in surface water supply reliability. We know we have huge challenges going into the future. We need to give the local groundwater management agencies better tools and authorities to, you know, to manage groundwater in a more integrated way with surface water and flood management responsibilities and water quality objectives and ecosystem objectives. That's what I think this is about. You know, the science and the law, yeah, it's different. They are distinct and separate by choice. We really need to kind of focus on really managing these things in a more integrated way and not try to win the debate over science versus law.
Okay, Laura, what are your thoughts? Do you think that something should be done to monitor or regulate groundwater pumping? And who should regulate it? We're talking about maybe local monitoring. What should be monitored? How should it be monitored? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think actually there is surprising consensus that that groundwater does need to be managed locally within a basin or even a sub-basin, and that also, in order to make that happen, there needs to be some really very clear and effective state oversight to make sure that that is happening, and that there's really the political will locally to make some of these really tough and hard decisions and actions that are going to be needed to really sustainably manage groundwater. California is the only Western state to not have comprehensive groundwater regulation at the state level. And I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons why groundwater really needs to be managed locally, principally because it's really complex and there's a lot of localized actions and details and complexities that need to be addressed with each specific locality. That said, it hasn't been effective, and much of that is because a lot of the regional management agencies, it hasn't been super clear who is in charge of groundwater management, ensuring that we have, you know, that we're not depleting our aquifers. Who actually has that authority and those powers and the actual tools to do that locally? And without that clarity and those tools, it's hard for it to happen.
Yeah, Mark, Mark Rossi, you're a reporter with the Fresno Bee. You cover these issues. Do you, in your research, have you seen how it's being handled elsewhere?
have. And I'll be honest with you, Mark, it's going to be different here than it is in most other places, just because California is so weirdly different from almost every place. It's almost a freak. I do know that in places like Colorado, they actually do the same thing with groundwater as they do with surface water. They have a separate permit system. It's really regulated, and Idaho does some of this stuff. So does Oregon and Washington. But you're talking about different hydrology in all of these places, and so what Laurel and Dave are saying is, I think, right. I think it's going to have to be intensely local, but someone's going to have to be looking over your shoulder. There's going to have to be some kind of guidance. So I think they're going to have to totally remake the wheel here and redo the whole thing special in California style, you know?
You know, it's interesting. You know, when I was in law school, there was always, you know, you study what the majority of states do and what the minority of states do, and invariably, what's California doing? So it's probably true in groundwater as well. Well, up next, what's happening to clean up contaminated wells in the San Joaquin Valley? And what does the quality of valley groundwater mean to the quantity of valley groundwater? That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking about the recent surge in groundwater pumping in the valley with two members of the Steering Committee on Sustainable Groundwater Management for the California Water Foundation, Laurel Firestone, an attorney with the Community Water Center, and David Orth, the general manager of the Kings River Conservation District. We're also talking with Mark Grassi, a reporter for the Fresno Bee, who's written extensively on water issues. So, Mark, let me turn to you for a second here. What about the issue of groundwater contamination in smaller valley towns? You've written extensively on that. Is there any new news on that front?
Well, the new news is anytime you get a drought that's intense like this, all the attention seems to go to surface water. And so if you're a small town in Tulare County and you're having nitrate issues, your issues are not in the front of the pack anyway, but now they're farther back. And as I understand it, and the other two panelists here can correct me, but as the pumping for water gets more intense, you tend to get more contaminants sucked into your well. And I would not be surprised if I went back out there and saw problems with more problems with nitrates out there. And you know, there's also the extensive issue of it's more extensive than people think, of private wells that are going dry now. And there's no help for any of those people. So, yeah, there's plenty of news to break on it. It's just not at the front of the bus here.
Well, Laurel Firestone, you're with the Community Water Center. Do you think enough is being done to address the issue of groundwater contamination?
Well, I think we need to do a lot more if we're going to really really make a dent in the impacts that are already happening and that are going to continue to happen. You know, there was the recent report by UC Davis estimated that by 2020, there was going to be up to 80% of our population in the Tulare Lake Basin that was going to be impacted by nitrates.
And what's the Tulare Lake Basin? What's the size of that?
Sorry, that's the southern San Joaquin Valley. So that's sort of the south of the San Joaquin River. And so, you know, this is something that is already affecting many people, already means that people don't have access to safe drinking water, and is going to get worse. I think there is a lot that is being done to try to address this. You know, it's not going to be solved overnight. But I actually think that, you know, this issue of groundwater management, if we need some agency that groundwater management is their mandate, is their focus, and that they have the tools and resources they need to be able to manage it sustainably, both for water quality and water quantity. And right now, that really doesn't exist.
David, in Kings River, David Orth, do you think that enough is being done to deal with the issue of groundwater contamination?
I would say within the Kings, we've invested a significant amount of time on this issue. Again, for that individual who doesn't have safe drinking water today, their answer will be no. But within the last year, last couple of years, we've done an extensive inventory of the disadvantaged communities within our groundwater base or within our basin, within our service area, and tried to catalog and identify the source of issues that they're challenged with. And it's not just groundwater contamination. It could include wastewater management and even stormwater management. But, before you can solve the problem, you need to start to understand the scope and magnitude of the problem. Lowell and I worked extensively through the governor's drinking water stakeholder group to try to identify barriers and challenges. And in some cases, what we did learn was that this thing is all over the board. In some cases, we have local entities that are not formed or lack the capacity to come to the public funding table. And at the other end of the spectrum, we have projects that have been funded with public money that don't have the technical or managerial capacity to run safe drinking water alternatives, treatment systems. So we're spending a lot of time and effort in trying to deal with this, but until we provide safe drinking water to the majority of the population, one can argue we're not doing enough.
Yeah, Mark, so how does the groundwater contamination issue, the quality of groundwater, impact the quantity of groundwater?
Well, I was thinking about that question in my mind. For instance, the city of Fresno, when the water quality, where there is not a big problem with this yet, but I mean, if there isn't management in the future, you're going to see the water table sink quite a bit, and you're going to see at the deeper depths they're going to bring up uranium and radon and iron and manganese and salts and all that stuff, and it's the stuff that Dave and Laurel talk about all the time. And yes, that's going to impact the quantity of water because you're going to have to pay more for it, and maybe that'll make people conserve a little bit more. But it's probably wiser to manage it up front and manage the groundwater table to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a huge issue, especially as the climate warms.
Yeah, Dave, I'm sorry, Laurel, you want to say something?
Yeah, I just might add to that. I mean, if you think about it, and I totally agree with Mark, but just to add to that, there's, when you can no longer use your well water because it's contaminated, and 90% or I think 95% of the communities in the southern San Joaquin Valley rely on groundwater for their drinking water supply. So as they're not able to use that drinking water supply, they're either have to treat that water, which generally is extremely expensive and also actually uses more water in the treatment process, or they have to look at accessing surface water supplies, which, as we've talked about, are decreasing and unreliable in many cases, and more so over time. Or they have to drill deeper and be tapping in new aquifers and using more energy to do that, increasing costs, and like Mark said, bringing in new types of contaminants like arsenic.
Let me ask Dave this question. Dave, other than slowing down the amount of groundwater that's being pumped, what can be done to make sure we have a clean and reliable source of groundwater? I mean, how do we make sure that we don't overdraft the valley's aquifers?
Well, there's supply-side and demand-side solutions, and frankly, the change in the way we move our surface water around this state, the restrictions in the delta that have significantly reduced the amount of surface water available to the southern San Joaquin Valley, the San Joaquin River restoration that has moved water that traditionally, after the development of the federal project down the east side of the valley into Tulare and Kern counties, and now moving, some flows back down the historical flow of the San Joaquin. That's all changed or reduced the best tool we had for management of a groundwater basin, and that is surface water supply reliability. So we need to continue to get as aggressive as we can to grab surface water when it comes. We need to right now be planning for the next flood and making sure that flood water stays in the basin and is used conjunctively to recharge the groundwater basin. And then we need to very, carefully and rationally look at what do we do on the demand side. Is it a land use decision-making process? There are lots of components that need to be put together around water use efficiency and water recycling, land use decision making and make a more integrated approach to protecting this resource.
Okay, Laurel, you're going to have the last word on this. What do you think needs to be done to make sure that we don't overdraft the valley aquifers?
Well, I think we need a new kind of more comprehensive groundwater management, and I'm optimistic because there's a lot of really momentum and consensus that we do need to do something like this, and that there's a lot of potential action happening at the state level right now to make that happen. So I think there's a possibility that we may actually start to get the tools we need to do it.
Always like ending on a positive note. Well, we've been talking with two members of the Steering Committee on Sustainable Groundwater Management for the California Water Foundation, Laurel Firestone, an attorney with the Community Water Center, and David Orth, the general manager of the Kings River Conservation District. We've also been talking with Mark Grassi, environmental reporter for the Fresno Bee. I want to thank all of them for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, the Maddie Daily, by just logging on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.